It is 23 minutes to 12, 23 minutes to the end of the show. Welcome to today. I'm Keno Cummings with you all the way through until midday. And I think the chat with Sisant Shona, the CEO of South African Tourism, was a great precursor to this discussion that we're now going to have with Rashid Tofi. Rashid Tofi is the Deputy Director General for Economic Opportunities and Tourism in the Western Cape, and really a chat about economy, preparing ourselves for post-COVID-19. What's government doing to create an environment where businesses operate in a much better environment? It's not always government's job to create jobs. I mean, yes, they do create jobs when they hire loads of people themselves, but they need to create an environment where, as businesses, we can pick up, you know, and just take the bootstraps, start moving again, build those businesses, create value, and hire new people eventually and create the jobs that the economy needs. So Rashid Tofi, Deputy Director General, Economic Opportunities and Tourism in the Western Cape. Good to have you on the show.
Kino, lovely to be here. Thank you very much.
Great. I don't know if you listened to some of what we discussed with Sisa and Shona, especially when it comes to hospitality, and I know tourism falls under you as well. You have any thoughts on that before we talk about, you know, what government's doing in general?
Yeah, I just heard you, Lincoln, but, you know, at the moment, you talk about adaptability. Hotels are now being readapted to be step-down facilities, field hospitals. So certainly there's a need for us to be flexible. At the moment, my mind's been focused. You know, you mentioned my title. I feel like my title is just guy on the front line fighting COVID, you know.
Yeah.
That's what our whole economic development and tourism team are busy doing, is how do we get through this first phase, which is just to survive this containment. It's kind of survival of the current health crisis, and then slowly start to realize the economic crisis, and then how do we react to it. So adaptability of hotels is crucial. I'd love to hear more, and I'll chat to Sisa about it. So.
Now, I think what Sisa was saying is that, generally speaking, the hospitality industry, right, the hospitality sector is probably a better way of putting it, has concentrated on international guests, bringing the dollars in, making sure that they make as much money to help them get over winter, and there has not been an effective focus on the local economy, creating local value for South Africans. Some of them pay lip service to it, but they still price themselves out of the market, the local market. There have been suggestions about dual pricing. I've been making suggestions that maybe hotel groups should look at, you know, looking at their income streams and innovating around that as well, as opposed to, you know, relying on what they've been relying on for the last, you know, 30 years, as Sisa says. So that's the type of discussions that we've been having. And while we try and fight coronavirus, COVID-19, at the same time, we need to start innovating. We don't have the luxury of only fighting the fight and then figuring out what we want to do afterwards, surely.
Not at all. In fact, you know, about half of our team are doing what this first phase, which is to fight the containment. And the next part is the next half of, you know, the second part of our strategy is how do businesses adapt. And the third one is how do we recover and rebuild.
Yeah.
So in the adaptation, a couple of people in our team are talking to various industries and saying, you know what's been brought upon us, Kino, is the idea of moving online, of moving digital and doing things differently. I mean, then if you've seen the thing going around, say, who moved your 4IO strategy forward? Was it the CEO, the CFO, or was it COVID? You know?
Yes.
So we're looking at how we're talking. We're actually bringing various industries together as well. So where the digital industry can support more brick and mortar industries, you know. But you asked me how we can support businesses. I mean, first of all, I want to thank businesses out there, the fish shops and the little stores that are taking it on the chin on behalf of the millions of people, just so that we can save lives. So people are taking an economic hit to save lives. And first of all, what we've done is we've kind of triaged all the available packages that are available by national. So people are quite cynical of that, but they slowly are coming on board, whether it's the UIF or Small Business Fund or the private private solidarity funds and so forth. We've made that all available on our website so that people can have full access to that. And then we're working with the city and on looking at our own budgets is where will we – we feel like we need to keep the powder dry. At the moment, our priority is the humanitarian fight.
Yes.
But as soon as we're through this rush and curve, we'll be outlining what kind of – how do we prioritize? My own tourism and economic support budget, I'm going to be reprioritizing that to go out there and support small businesses and various sectors that have been most hard hit, you know.
Yes, and it's important. It's so important to do that. And I mean, the humanitarian side of it is very important. I've heard of businesses just telling their employers, "Well, you offer the 2 weeks, we're not going to pay you." Some of the labor lawyers have come forward saying, "Hold on, they can't necessarily do that." So when we talk about humanitarian assistance from your particular department, is that something you look at as well? Because when people are negatively affected because they've got unscrupulous bosses trying to keep as much money in their own personal bank accounts and not caring about their staff, I mean, is that something that you take into account?
Well, we are. We've got various toolkits that we have available to guide people. For example, when we had the tourism industry, in fact, in a room, we had an attorney there who advised people of how to do short time. So if you can do a section 189 that agrees with your staff, you're not going to lay them off, but we are going to all take a 25% cut in salary for the next month. So people need to be creative about that, and you don't have to lay off staff immediately, but you need to cut your basic costs. Many people are staying home, so they do have reduced costs. I'm not sure if people are concerned. I know I have about a 2,000 rand less travel petrol bill because I'm staying at home, you know. But if my employer needs me to take a hit of 25% on my salary, that's one way of doing it while retaining. So our team at DDAT and Westgrow have legal advice and support people who can ask, who can help you with exactly those kind of questions.
Brilliant.
You know, how do you... Yeah, so, I also have, you know what, we've spent a lot of time in the last little while. I go to the SAPS Prof Jock, and I don't know if you've had many questions, but I finally yesterday got clarity on certain stores and things that can open and can't.
Yes.
Open. I don't know if you'd like me to give you some
of those. Please. I mean, it's one of the biggest questions, most frequent ones we're getting, yeah?
So let me quickly, I just got like five or six of them that I thought may have come up on your show. So, of course, grocery stores are allowed, as are butcheries and convenience stores, corner shops, spaza shops, any person who provides basic groceries. The area of interpretation is you're not allowed to be open if you're only selling sweets and chocolates and cigarettes.
Sure.
But if you're selling basics, you can. Cigarettes may be sold during lockdown. Mm. Alcohol not, but cigarettes is a yes. Pets and veterinary shops are allowed to be open, but only to sell the animal products and animal medicines. So you should be cordoning off the rest of your stuff. Health shops was a tough one, but we finally managed to get that as a go because some health shops effectively sell food, hygiene products, and cleaning products. And so they are allowed, but they're only allowed to sell essential goods. Mm. Cell phone shops are not allowed because you can get your airtime at a normal other store, any other store. So that's not considered essential. Money lending is not considered essential. And businesses that deliver food, we've heard, can operate, but only for essential groceries to people's homes, not...
Okay, so like Pick and Pay or 60-60 that ShopRite Checkers has got in place, they can do deliveries, but only for essential goods. But then who decides what a blinking essential good is, right? So I had someone who runs a butchery going, hold on, I sell meat and et cetera, et cetera. Can I remain open as a butchery?
Yeah, so who decides is the national regs come out from COGDA and from DTI, but it really is a house SAPS. South African police services choose to
interpret it.
To police it. So Brigadier Zandberg and Colonel Clutty and us sit down every day with a list of difficult questions and say, so how do you interpret this one? And our latest one was fuel. So if you're buying wood, so apparently that is fuel, hence it is something you can buy. It's not
wood.
Essential for rural communities, you know?
Okay.
So remember, our questions vary down to rural areas that are asking. And so the second thing was this issue of your permit. I just wanted to clarify, getting a SIPC permit, which anyone could literally get on a website, does not constitute your legal right to operate. It means you have a subsea permit which says you could operate, but the police still will enforce what they regard as essential or non-essential. So people are going to be stuck at roadblocks if you're moving around doing things that are not deemed essential by the police services and by... So there is some uncertainty, but I think, largely speaking, 85% of people are getting it. I'm impressed, and I said, once again, I want to thank the community for just doing the right thing, stay at home, and I think it's a very special time to stop and reflect, and even as an entrepreneur, yes, you've got no income, I feel for you, but this is your time to reflect on your entire business model, and when you're ready to start up, believe me, government and financial houses and everyone else will be ready to help you rise from the ashes, if you like. You know, that's what we need after this.
And let's talk about that, though. You talk about government, you talk about financial houses and helping you rise from the ashes, which is very important. But how would that – do you have any idea what that would look like? I know you said that you have teams that obviously focus on the people side of the things, getting the right information out, which is so important. But you must have teams working on the post-COVID-19, post-lockdown, as a matter of fact. What would that help potentially look like?
I mean, so first, as a government, we work with many intermediaries, small development finance institutions or organizations like ASISA that help small businesses in certain subsectors. So we last year we funded about 20 small organizations down to township level, down to individual businesses, whether it's Cathedra or universities who support entrepreneurs. So we will work with all those intermediary bodies and make sure they still have the support they need. They either have access to national grants that are available. So we're busy understanding if there's a 200 million rand tourism fund, how do we understand that and make sure we support people to access it, and where we can help either provide training or provide our own top-up funding, we will make that available. I mean, I can't commit to that because we don't know when this will end and
absolutely
and what kind of funding we will have as a Western Cape. And the city are doing the same. I think if you ever want to, you should speak maybe to Lance Grayling. He's on our economic team to find out what are the kind of things they're putting together to help support businesses.
Oh, no, we'll definitely get Lance on. Good man. I think we'll definitely get him on to talk about it. We received a call now. Imran, you might know Imran as well. Imran Mukadam. A community activist as well. Imran Rashid Tofi is on air with us. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Kino.
It's a pleasure. You've got I believe you have a challenge with police closing down spaza shops.
Very much so. Very much so. It's really quite ridiculous that we are classified as essential services, but most of the essential services in the Cape Flats are being harassed by law enforcement and police. With no clear directions on what is the proper opening and closing times, what's the requirements, so much rumors, so much confusion that it's very difficult trading circumstances, especially for foreign-owned spaza shops, because they're being harassed continuously. And there is a definite element of corruption as well. I've had reports. A few Somali shopkeepers has come to me and said that they are closed, and then they are told they could open, but then they have to give a back end to law enforcement officers. So this is something we would really need an inquiry on.
Yeah.
So let me just respond. So every morning at 7:30, I attend what's called the SAPS, Prof Jockcom. So every single police station in the country, in the Western Cape, are dialed in on a teleconference, right? And the general stands up, General Lincoln, and he tells them the rules for the day, the interpretations of the day. And several times, starting Saturday, we've said spaza shops can open. There are no time restrictions. Spaza shops owned by foreigners are absolutely can open. That was a misinterpretation, you know. And corner shops can open. Superettes on the corner who provide essential services. So it's important, Imran, that you give me the exact specifics. I literally came out of a meeting with Brigadier Zandberg. I have her SMS, I have her WhatsApp, and I will email SMS her and say, in Mitchell's Plain, there's a cash and carry that's being closed down, and she'll say, got it noted, Mr. Dofi, and I'll get back to you. So we've got 30,000 police officers in the Western Cape, while their captains and their commanders are all in the briefing session, it still comes down to everyday policing. And in some cases, we know that it's been people selling alcohol. So that's why they wish the spaza shop was sold on, because he was illegally selling alcohol. So sometimes people are wrongly policed, and other times it's simply a case of someone trying to dodge the rules, you know. I can list specific cases. If you tell me where this has happened, what harassment has happened, I will take it up directly with the police and shut it down immediately, you know?
Absolutely.
Or take that police officer into account, you know? Yeah. Hold him to account.
So who actually, from a national operations, you talk about General Lincoln. He's obviously head of the anti-gang unit. Is he running this nationally?
No. Provincially, General Lincoln runs the Prof Jock Com every morning.
Okay.
He's the head of this operation. And then Brigadier Zandberg, as you know, is really head of policing. So she's my direct link. But I sit in that meeting and you hear, you know, people from crime intelligence. So you hear about how our roadblocks have caught sort of hundreds of guys, illegal immigrants, moving illegal contraband. Mm. So it's been quite intriguing to see how something as simple as a lockdown and a roadblock has squeezed businesses. But it's a full command and control structure. It's all hands on deck around COVID roadblocking and responses. So, but if anybody needs it, if Imran can give me the number.
Yeah, we'll get you all those details. We'll get you all those details. Now, Rashid, the other thing is, I always tease him, and I call him Sheriff J.P. Smith. Now, Sheriff Smith has suggested, and this was in the media, that shops open 9 to 1 because there are lots of people driving around, and when they get stopped, they get told, they're telling the officers that they're going to the shop. And the city is suggesting that closing shops after 1 o'clock will then enable the police to enforce a lot more effectively.
So it was suggested this morning in our meeting with Minister Mania that the city were considering possibly a curfew of sorts, but it's not been confirmed, and there's no rule that suggests there is a curfew. At the moment, large retailers have chosen out of their own need and for their own staff's sake to stop trading at about 6 o'clock.
Yes.
But there's no rule stopping any other store, a spaza shop or a corner shop, from staying open. I think you must bear in mind that people use public transport. They need to get to medical facilities, get their SASSA grant, and their only time to shop maybe at an odd time. But there's certainly, I can confirm to you from this morning that there is no such curfew being put in place. But those are the considerations that are being had just to continue to keep us at home. I mean, I don't know if you know, but we've done an incredible job to keep the numbers relatively low in South Africa, because I think we've acted strongly and hard.
Oh, yes.
So we're preparing for a surge. We could still have a big surge of this virus, but I think we're just doing an incredible job to just hold.
No, all of you. I mean, if I just think about the leadership in your department, economic opportunities and tourism, it's yourself, it's your teams that work under you, it's Solly Faree, and I know that David Mania's army experience is coming to the fore here. He's been working. We've been trying to get him on, but I think, totally understandably so, he's really been driving a lot of this as well, hasn't he?
No, he absolutely leads it. He runs it like it's his command meeting at 10 o'clock. Every single department, transport, social development. You heard my perspective today for 20 minutes, but you could have Robert McDonald, the head of social services, and you'll hear the hundreds of thousands of people who are doing the school feeding systems and the humanitarian efforts, and then Jackie Gooch at transport. How are they managing the taxis and trying to adapt to the rules? But Minister Mania actually asked me to give you the personal message to say he remains available if he is available to call you.
Yep.
This actually is a better slot than 9:30. So if you ever wanted him, 11:30 is when our one meeting ends, and I will ask him if he would
absolutely
like.
Absolutely, no, we can do that.
Sure, but his experience and his absolute commitment has been amazing, and he's ready. He's on standby to talk to you if you like.
Absolutely, no, we like the work he's doing. The Premier's been on point. It's nice to have a Premier that can answer questions, almost any question. He's obviously kept up to date as well by all of you.
No, he sits in every meeting. So this morning, when I'm in a meeting, you're on these Zoom meetings, and Premier's sitting there listening. Believe me, the whole cabinet is on board. People don't have breaks. It goes Every single day there's a cabinet meeting. Do you know that? Yeah. So it's pretty hectic and pretty intense, and everyone's on board. But even more amazingly is the collaboration with national. People forget there's no political differences between provinces. We have open lines, open WhatsApp chats like never before. I just really hope this is going to be how we solve crime and how we solve poverty in the post-COVID environment. Because if we have this level of intensity to deal with other government crises or economic and social crises, we could get a lot done, you know.
There's one CEO that made a joke, but it was, he said, listen, if only the economy were a virus, not as lethal, not taking lives, if the economy were a virus, we'd get this type of decisiveness on the economy in general as well. So, but listen, well done to all of you working your hindies off and making sure that this economy can tick along. And we'll definitely take you up on just getting the minister on maybe at 11:30 one day just to give us his take and about what's been happening. But Rashid Tofi, always a pleasure chatting to you. And once again, wonderful work.
Thank you. Take care.
There we go. Deputy Director General, Economic Opportunities and Tourism in the Western Cape. We should also get General Lincoln on at some stage. I mean, he's running that from a policing point of view. It's good to know that he is in charge of the Western Cape side of things, and maybe get some clarity from the General at some stage as well. So looking forward to that. If there's anything you'd like to say in closing, I will give you an opportunity to make that call on 021-446-0567 and WhatsApp on 072-567-1567. And yeah, it's been a phenomenal show, by the way. Thank you for allowing us into your space. You could do a million things at home. You could be listening to music. You could be doing all sorts of other stuff, but you've chosen to tune into us, and we really appreciate that on the show today. And it's probably the first time you're listening to the show as well, because maybe traditionally, normally, you'd be sitting in